Wild Time. The Animal Rights / World Conservation Show on 106.8 TCRFM.
TCRFM.
You are listening to Wild Time, the Animal Rights / World Conservation Show with myself, Thomas Janak, here on TCIFM 106.8 in and around Tamworth and of course globally on tcifm.co.uk. Sadly, we have to cover the dolphins of Japan again and again and again. Seems to be a thing that we have to do every year. I remember years ago people would say if people would know about it, it would stop. Then the cove came out, it hasn't stopped. So the killings still go on. It usually starts in September and then goes on for a while. But what is different here in 2012 is that now, on the 31st of August, actually globally in many, many cities, there are events that are called Save the Japan Dolphin. And I'm talking to Zoe N, or N, it's really her name, who is in Hong Kong at the moment. And she is one of the organizers for one of the events there. Zoe, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me, and thank you for your interest in this situation we have.
We're very interested in it, and I, you know, the first time I heard about this myself was very late. It was in 2009 that I only became aware of the Cove movie and all that kind of stuff, so we're having a little bit of catching up to do.
No, absolutely. Likewise, I used to go and watch dolphin shows. I had no idea about, you know, the whole captivity and the brutal slaughter. Is, you know, if you go and see these shows, you're basically, you know, prolonging their agony and making this brutality happen. And the only reason why I want to do this is just to bring awareness, because I only just found out too.
Well, but, I mean, I think we all have pictures. I have pictures of me and my kids in the zoo. Yeah. You know, making you know, stupid faces in front of a meerkat or something, you know, and saying, "Oh, look how great it is, how close we are to nature." And now, I wouldn't go near a zoo if you paid me for it. But so we're all learning. We're all learning, I think, you know.
It's very difficult to, you know, say, well, what's the difference between a dolphin and, you know, a fish, or, you know, they're all the same. But I think that dolphins, you know, have. They're very, very special sentient beings. They're very intelligent.
I mean, we always say, you know, being an animal rights show, you know, and having done shows on rats and bugs and, you know, elephants and dolphins and whales, obviously from a global point of view, all animals need protection. I think what is different with the dolphin is that the good thing about the dolphin is that a lot of people naturally are fond of him.
Yes.
You know, that's why I'm so shocked, because the idea usually is when they're fond of them, then they look at the issue and help. And somehow, even though, you know, we're getting more and more activists each year, and I know there's lots more pressure on the Japanese government, as it were, we're still, at this point in time, you know, we still have to protest.
All animals need to be treated in respect. And even if dolphins are born in captivity, it doesn't make it any better. It's not acceptable to keep a dolphin in a tank like a bathtub.
Yes.
It's criminal.
And just for you listeners out there, you know, if I can plug myself, I will. We just recently spoke to David Kirby and his book Death at SeaWorld, where he really, as a journalist, had a look at all the deaths that occurred there with regards to trainers. And at the end of the day, everybody involved in the book came to the conclusion that keeping sentient beings in captivity is not the way to go. So please have a listen on Wild Time Online later. So tell me a bit about the event. Where is it and what exactly is going on?
The event, actually, the first one I went to was 2 years ago and was set up by a good friend called Jess Chan, who this year she will be at the Cove again. She will be at Ground Zero. She's very brave to be able to do that with Rick O'Barry. Mm-hmm. At our event in Hong Kong, we just go to the Japanese embassy and we will politely hand in a petition with a letter for our cause. Just from people from Hong Kong, just to let them know that we are aware of this, but also aware that the meat is dangerous and it's toxic and the Japanese people don't know about this. So it's just about putting an awareness out there. We'll go out to the Japanese embassy and we'll meet with the Consul General of Japan in Hong Kong. And if everybody does this in all the cities around the world, we can slowly make a change. And I think we are making a change. I think the numbers are dwindling. And Rico Barry, my hat's off to him. You know, he's an absolute warrior for what he's doing.
Yes, and you know, in the beginning, people would say like, oh, you know, he's on the road to redemption because he started the whole shebang, you know. And, you know, I always say like, you know, does a man not have a choice to change, you know? It's the same thing, you know, because we, you know, when we do shows on zoos, for instance, I'm convinced that people who work in the zoo, you know, with really bad pay and, you know, they love the animals there. You know, so it's not about bashing someone's head in over what they have once done. It's about saying, you know, there are things going on that need to be highlighted and changed, you know, and not so. I always sort of find it interesting when people don't look at the issue, but look at Rico Barry and, you know, start sort of calling him names, you know, very strange.
Well, everybody can have their own opinion, and everybody's growing at a different time in their life and learning stuff. So we just have to have patience, I think.
True. On the other hand side, obviously, as you know very well, patience is something we cannot really afford. When we do, I mean, you know, when we do shows on sharks, for instance, you know, if the shark goes, we all go. And when you look at that, 100 million, up to 100 million sharks get killed a year. You know, it's not a luxury that we have, but I understand that, you know, it's not happening overnight.
We have so many shark spins in Hong Kong. That is a problem. And there's the bear bile situation. And slowly, you know, all of us who are passionate about these things, we will rally together for a change. But for the 31st of August is our big day, and it will be the second moon, full moon of the month. And we hope to have at least 1 million people globally around the world outside the Japan consulates, just to let them know it will be a peaceful demonstration. Just to let them know we're aware and they need to make a change. It's not a cultural thing.
And it's not a scientific thing either.
It's not a scientific thing. And old minds can change.
Yes.
You know, it's just about re-educating people, maybe, you know?
And then the other thing, the reality also is, and I think, you know, like I said, you know, this show started out as an animal welfare show. Now it's an animal rights show. And we tend to be less forgiving than we were, let's just say, 4.5 years ago. Because basically, as long as there's some money to be made, they're not listening to, it's not about only changing their minds. It's also about saying, look, you know, you are being watched.
You know what I'm delighted about, though? Like in Germany, there are several countries that have actually put in the new law. They are anti-dolphin captivity. So there is a law, and there are some theme parks who go by that rule, some countries, and they won't have captive dolphins. And this has happened this year. So
yes, absolutely.
It's tremendous.
And at the same time, my fellow Germans, you know, kept Paul Watson there until he legged it.
Oops, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, no, but it's one of those things. I you know, the thing about laws is that it has to be, they have to be enforced. But you're absolutely right, because if one country has it, let's just say in Europe, then very likely other European countries also would have it easier. Let's just say they go to court and say, like, look, another European country, you know, well, oftentimes they have the same governing bodies, you know, is doing this already. So absolutely, and I completely agree. It's also interesting that I recently spoke to a gentleman who helps wolves. But he became an animal rights activist when he heard about Morgan the Orca, who was held in captivity in the Netherlands. So you're right, people are coming together. How did you get into this?
It's very strange. I've been a vegetarian for a year. I just had this dawning. I mean, I've been aware about, you know, animal experimentation and stuff like that. But I think when you get older, you're more comfortable to speak up, say something, and stand your ground. And, you know, you realize that if you don't do it, then nobody else is going to do it for you.
Yes. You can't wait for other people to do it.
Exactly. And, you know, like you said, you know, you're talking about the government and a lot of money. So it is a very delicate situation. But I've seen improvement in the last year, like I said. So I have faith. And it's just, I mean, I'm not on ground zero, and I haven't seen it in real life. I don't think I could handle it.
Absolutely. No, neither have I. And I, you know, when I talk to people who were there, like Kerry O'Brien and, you know, Len Varley and Nicole McLaughlin. So we talked to these people, and I couldn't be there either, because, you know, I probably couldn't. Yeah, I would probably jump in there or something, then they would just deport me. So it's great, you know. So not everything is for everybody.
Yeah, no. There's a time for everything, and right now it's this for me. Right now, in this time of my life, and I'm happy. You know, Jess will be right there in Taji, and hopefully we'll keep up in real time, and
yes,
you know, the numbers will hopefully get down. Less and less and less murders every year. And less taken away from the families.
So your people, let's just say, like, you know, friends in Hong Kong and, you know, wherever you happen to sort of move around. My experience is when I sometimes talk to people, they ask, you know, what is this about your radio show? And I tell them how that changed my life and, you know, what you find out. For some of them, it's quite easy to relate to it. And others go like, oh, don't really want to know. So how do you find the sort of the interaction with people on the ground when you sort of say, like, you know, I've changed a bit?
It's funny you should say that. I find that I think maybe television and just some humans, well, some of us, we get desensitized. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reality of it actually really isn't that in the forefront of our minds, you know. But one day we might have a dawning and realize. That's all I can say.
So if people who are listening to this or know someone in Hong Kong or me or even want to go there, two questions. How can they get in touch with you guys? And secondly, you know, where is it?
At the moment, we have, I believe it's 48 countries that Sandy from Save Misty Dolphin, she set up 48 countries at the moment. So there's 48 people like me trying to do this around the world. If you go to Facebook and you just put in Save Japan Dolphins or Save Japan Dolphin Day, you will be led to all the events that are happening. Hopefully, you know, there's one in Philippines, Hong Kong, there's one in Brazil.
One in London.
It's all there on Facebook, yep, basically around the world. And if it's not, then make sure it happens in your city. And it's not too late to set one up now.
Absolutely, absolutely. So just for you guys out there, there is a chance that if you listen to this and I've only been speaking to Zoe, then that's just because I didn't get anyone else. But at this point in time, I'm trying to get other people who are involved in these things in other cities. So maybe it's a longer interview. Or it isn't, you know. So we'll see how it goes.
Go to savejapandolphin.org, and also on Facebook you'll see our events. They're going to be everywhere on the 31st of August or the 1st of September, depending which city you're in.
Where you are, time-wise and stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. But it's a global movement. Be part of it. Be part of the problem. No, be part of the solution, not the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's also great. I always find that, you know, when people sort of say, and, you know, they tell you you're a bit different and strange, whatever have you. I always find whenever I go down to a protest, doesn't matter if I take part or if I go there to record it, which is in a way also taking part in it. The amount of people that you meet. It's usually, even though we talk about the nitty-gritty and the really, really strange and difficult things and heartbreaking things, the people are always full of hope, and it's a very sort of nice feeling to be with people who say, like, you know, we're doing something. You know, I cannot stress it enough how liberating it can be to peacefully
really
protest someone. You don't have to shoot anyone, you know. You know, the whole violence idea that is out there.
To be in contact with people who are like-minded. I've met so many people in the last month alone just putting this event together, and it's great, you know. It's very uplifting, and it gives you a little bit of hope, you know.
Absolutely. And imagine the day comes where all dolphins around the globe go free. Then you also know that you were one of the people that made it happen.
Yeah, but there's always going to be something else after that. Then there's the pollution.
Yeah, but that goes without saying. You know what is funny? I'm involved in radio for about 10 years now, and I had a social justice show where I talked about breast cancer and problems in Uganda and whatever have you, you know. And now I'm doing this show. And when I started this show, I thought I can do this for 6 months because, you know, what is there to talk about? I had no idea. Now we're going for over 4.5 years. We have done over 290 shows. And I probably see myself doing this for, you know, the foreseeable future, because I just wasn't aware how many issues and difficulties, you know, our animal kin are facing.
Yeah. Not our animal, but our animals, yes. But, I mean, if you think about the planet Earth, they call it the Earth, but actually 2/3 of it is water.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we need to protect our waters because, you know, with the food chain, with the global warming, with everything, it's all down to those waters. So we've got to take care of them.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. And people, you know, I think one of the issues is because the oceans are so vast that some people think, oh, you know, how can you actually do this? And my answer is always, you know, just start somewhere. I mean, we know from talking to people with you and others that obviously it is difficult to control and patrol the waters. Doesn't mean we shouldn't be there trying to do just that, you know. So it is, you're absolutely right. It is one of those things. And the other thing that I find great is that people are also coming together from different countries. All of a sudden, it's not the bad Japanese. People understand, oh, most Japanese people have nothing to do with it, don't know anything about it. And that's another thing that I find really, really important, because the one thing I hate, you know, being a foreigner myself, living abroad, is racism.
Yes, nobody's pointing fingers at the Japanese. We'll find actually not very many of them are aware that there is dolphin meat on the market and how toxic and hazardous it is.
Yeah.
We just want to put the information out there so that at least they can make a decision, you know, based on the information that they're given. I just found out today that Hong Kong is like they buy 25% of their fish products from Japan. Which is quite interesting, you know.
Yeah. It's one of the biggest ports for it, I've been told. I talked to a gentleman whose name escapes me now, a photographer who lives in Hong Kong, and we talked about manta gills and
Gary Stokes?
Say again?
Gary Stokes?
No, it wasn't Gary Stokes, but, you know, the name, obviously, you know, if you just type in Hong Kong on Wild Time Online, you find it. I'm going to find it later on. I can't remember. Sometimes, you know, I talk to people and it's like with you, but like, oh, I know her, and then we just 10 minutes later, we're on air. So I really can't remember his name. I know he's a photographer, and I checked out his website. But I'm also very bad with names, you know. But I know it's not Gary Stokes because, you know, being a big CSI fan, if his last name would have been Stokes, like in Nick Stokes, I would have remembered.
Japan, you know, we just want to inform them, let them know what's going on, and let them decide what they want to do. And hopefully, you know, we will get a few people interested in wanting to make a change at that end too, you know.
And you also, you know, you mentioned the second full moon. And, you know, I believe a lot in energy. And I also, you know, I'm 100% sure that when in 48 countries so far, people gather with the intent to raise awareness and to be pro-dolphin, and even if it's just saying, like, you know, we know this is happening to you and we can't help you this year, but we're trying, is a positive energy that encircles the globe.
Yes.
You know, I know it sounds a bit odd to people, but I absolutely believe it. Intention is everything, you know?
Thank you. I totally hear what you're saying. I feel you totally. And thank you so much, actually, you know, for taking the time to, you know, bring attention to this, because we need as much help as we can.
Yeah, thank and you. right back at you. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Okay, absolutely. Take care of yourself. And, bye from Hong Kong.
Yeah, bye. Bye.
Total Choice Radio means you say what we play.
We are the station with no playlists and all Total Choice.
106.8 TCR FM.
Moving swiftly on from Hong Kong to the States. You see, that's the thing about radio. You know, we can just... It's like always like beaming. You just go from one place to the other. So that's really a good thing. Today we're talking about the Save Japan Dolphins events. And it's really great because according to the latest thing that I read, there are about 78 cities who have committed themselves to put on an event one day before the killings are scheduled to continue or happen again in Taiji. So I'm joined actually here by Sandy McElhaney, who is just outside of Washington. I actually thought for whatever reason she's in Ohio, but she's not. Just outside of Washington in the state of Virginia. And so she's involved in that as well. And I'm just going to ask her, you know, how is she involved in this? Sandy, very welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. So in what way are you involved? Are you organizing one of the... It's a series of protests in front of embassies.
There's actually, as of right now, 82 peaceful protests scheduled for Japan Dolphins Day, which will take place on August 31st or September 1st around the world. My role is really as a helper. I am a member of the social media team at Save Misty the Dolphin. We have been working directly with the folks at Save Japan Dolphins to help the event leaders around the world get ready for their events. We've been providing assistance in the form of helping them set up Facebook pages for each of their events, but more importantly, we've been networking them. We have a forum in which All of these event leaders around the world are able to share ideas and inspiration, talk about their latest accomplishments as they prepare for their events, and also discuss setbacks. It's working in a community is very, very tough. Planning an event like this can be overwhelming if you've never done it before, and we're able to put folks who've had lots of experience doing these events together with folks who've never even thought about doing something like this, but who saw the movie The Cove and wanted to make a difference. We're able to bring all these folks together, and I think it's been very positive for everybody involved.
Yeah, I mean, the sheer, it doesn't really matter if you're experienced or not, in the sense that when your task is to coordinate sort of 82 countries, for want of a better word, that must be difficult.
It's difficult, but it's certainly worth it. We say at the team Save Misty, we're only as good as the people that we work with, and the reality is that these 82 folks around the world are amazing. You know, the folks who've been doing this have been sharing their strategies, things from, you know, what you need to have on the day of the event, how do you prepare for the weather, poster ideas. So we're just kind of facilitating and, providing a mechanism so folks can get the most out of their planning time and take advantage of the experience of others who've been there before. Mm. But it's a blast, and quite honestly, we're making a lot of friends along the way too. These are just some really, really cool people who are standing up for the Dolphins.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been doing this show for quite a while, and the first time we sort of talked about it on air was in 2009. And now in 2012, it's still going on. And I remember years ago, someone once said, you know, you probably are familiar with the Paul McCartney quote, if Slaughterhouse had, glass walls, you would all be off meat. I heard similar things when The Cove came out. People said, like, you know, once people know it's going to end, and it hasn't ended, very likely, and, you know, quite simply because there's still money to be made. But obviously it has gotten better in the sense that it's much more public. We had the chance and, the opportunity to talk to quite a lot of the Cove Guardians, and some of them have actually written books about it. So it is more in the public eye, but an event like this, 82 cities around the world, has never been done before. So that must be the biggest in the history of the campaigns against the Tai Chi slaughters.
You know, we were involved last year as well, and we worked with 31 cities last year, so it is definitely more than doubled. And I had the chance to talk with Rick O'Berry a few weeks ago. In fact, I just published an article on I write a little column. I just published an article about it. You know, Rick is feeling hopeful because you're right. The slaughter does continue, but the numbers are going down.
Yes.
And in this article, in this interview, he attributes it to the M word, and that being mercury. Mm-hmm. And the folks at Save Japan Dolphins are just working doggedly to get that word out. And that's really, I think, in so many ways, the solution. As Rick says, it's all about supply and demand. And if the people of Japan knew that they are being poisoned, they would.
And it is surprising. And we talked about this a couple of times. That obviously it's a staple food in schools. So we're also talking about poisoning people that are not consciously going out and buying that stuff. You're talking about kids who have no say in this whatsoever.
This is where I think the folks at Save Japan Dolphins feel like they really are making some progress, because the numbers of dolphins being slaughtered is going down, and people are not purchasing the dolphin meat as much. I understood that the use of the dolphin meat in schools had stopped following the release of The Cove. I believe I read that on the website of the Oceanic Preservation Society. If it has started up again, I'm not aware of that. But, some progress is being made.
And at this point in time, I think the other thing that sort of oftentimes sort of makes the round in animal rights circles and stuff is that they're sort of used to having small victories. And people say, you know,
right.
It's just the way it is. But this is a really serious thing because it's been going on for quite a while. They're also in direct violation of a number of laws when it comes to, you know, I mean, the whole scientific thing. Everybody knows and, you know, that it's just not true. It's not done for scientific reasons because, you know, SeaWorld and the likes do not do scientific research. So the arguments have gone out of this a long time ago. And here we still are doing this. But you're absolutely right. There are things that have been much more transparent in a way.
Yes. But there is, as you say, you know, ways to go. I mean, I saw the Cove movie in 2010, and you know, I'm out on the streets and I'm talking to people. Many people still haven't seen it. You know, that's kind of the key. The Cove movie is the greatest tool that this movement has, and I really want to urge everyone who's listening to this show to take 90 minutes and to watch The Cove, because I have to say, watching that movie changed my life.
It's really important to also mention, for the people who watch it, make sure you take a little more time and watch the extras, because the real heavy thing about the mercury is in the extras. You know, just to say that there's a bigger section or segment when they talk about mercury and how much is there in the fish and what it actually does. There seems to be more in the extras than in the movie, probably out of, you know, time-wise. So just make sure when you get the DVD, you know, watch everything.
Absolutely. I mean, I have it on my iPod, and I take it wherever I go. And in fact, I know that some of the folks who are doing their events on Japan Dolphins Day are going to have the Cove movie playing there for passersby to see. Yeah. It is that powerful of a film. You know, really, that movie is what brought me into this movement. And many months later, I became involved in our social media campaign, and we haven't stopped.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we can't afford to stop. I mean, that's, we're in this all together, and we all, you know, we keep on coming. I think that's the way to go. But you also, you know, you talked about the Save Misty campaign.
Right.
And I just want to briefly sort of divert to it, because obviously you have involved in this, and I'm sure I'm one of many who doesn't really know much about Misty and what's going on there. So if you could clue us in, maybe there's something we could do there too, by, I don't know, signing petitions or whatever is going on there.
Absolutely. Well, Save Misty the Dolphin is a social media campaign that was founded on Facebook in the last days of 2010. Some friends of mine who were Cove Guardians at the time on the ground in Taiji discovered a very sickly dolphin being held in what amounted to an above-ground pool in Taiji. The dolphin is the property of the Hotel Dolphin Resort, which is right there in the city of Taiji. This dolphin was just kind of floating listlessly in water that was black, algae, thick algae on the sides of the pools, of the pool. And it probably had about a day left.
It's unbelievable. I mean, you know, it's one of those things that are always, probably it's a good thing that we're still so affected by it.
This discovery by the Cove Guardians, they took video footage and they posted it on the internet, and a colleague of mine, Adam Philby, saw it and kind of ran with it. He created, along with Allison Walsh Fernandez, our Facebook page, Save Misty the Dolphin, and people flocked by the thousands to this page very quickly and became involved in a direct action campaign of just nonstop, around-the-clock calls to ask that this dolphin be moved out of the water and, you know, put in healthier conditions. Paul Watson, the head of Sea Shepherd, even offered to purchase the dolphin, and the folks there wouldn't agree. But after 5 days of really being pounded by amazing activists all around the world, they moved Misty into a bigger, cleaner pool, And, you know, over time, he got better. He got adequate medical care. Mm-hmm. And recently, we have received photos of him. He is still being held in confinement, but he is in a pool with other dolphins. He is healthy. He is much better looking than he was in those last days of 2010. Yes. And so Misty founded our movement. And, yeah. You know,
it's also important to say that still people have to flock there, because confinement should not be where he ends, you know, where this is not where the story should end.
Our job isn't over at Save Misty the Dolphin until... you know, the waters of the cove are blue forever and the last dolphin is free. And we continue what we do every single day in that dolphin's name. There are now 10,000 people who are part of our community, and they follow us as we follow Taiji every day. We've followed the hunt.
I just want to plug myself here if I can, because we have an online version called Wild Time Online where you also find this interview. And if you just type in The Cove or Taiji, you find interviews with Nicole McLachlan, Casey O'Brien, Len Varley, and Stephen Thompson as well, about this topic. So if you think, you know, because we're touching on this today, if you want to have a more in-depth look about this, that's why we're uploading the interview. So if you just go to wildtimeonline.blogspot.com, type in any of those words, Taiji, Japan, The Cove, you will find these interviews there for you, just so that you get a bigger picture of people who were actually there as it happened. So just to say, I just wanted to say that you know, that's the idea about making it online.
Absolutely. Nicole, as you mentioned, Andy and Libby were the three Cove Guardians on the ground that we worked with. Mm. And, you know, we continue to support the on-the-ground campaigns of Sea Shepherd and Save Japan Dolphins. From the moment the boats go out until they come back in, our social media campaign tracks what's happening in Taiji, and we give people direct action steps in terms of what they can do speak out by contacting their embassies, who to call, and fax. And it's also a place where, again, part of this has to do with mutual support. Watching all of this stuff is very draining. I am a master's level mental health counselor, and you know, we care about the people in our community, and we want them to take good care of themselves as they're watching Taiji and the events unfold. So we try and make sure that, you know, folks are getting enough sleep and you know, doing what they need to do so that they don't just crumble to pieces after watching this.
I mean, that's the other side really is that, you know, I think probably we all underestimated it at some level. Once you're in there, you know, it is, because sometimes we feel like paralyzed, that there's just so little we can do. We would all just like to jump in there and somehow stop the boat. So I think from an emotional point of view, that's something that you learn over the years. But it's great that you mentioned this, that people, obviously, one of the ideas would be to... you know, write to your embassy, be in front of it. I mean, that's what's happening here on the Save Japan Dolphins Day. So be visible. It's really important. And the other thing that I also always want to highlight is, and we have done many interviews with people from Japan, in Japan, or even with people who are from Japan and were on one of the Sea Shepherd boats. This is not about the Japanese people. They are not bad people. They are just people there that do the wrong things, but please refrain from racism, because we've been through that. It's one of those things that doesn't help anyone. When people say, like, you know, F the Japanese or whatever you have there, that's not going to help. Just to say that, because sometimes people use these, I don't know, you know, this racism thing.
I couldn't agree with you more, and, you know, we have a zero tolerance policy for that on our page, because we know ultimately that the solution to the crisis in Taiji lies with the people of Japan. They need to feel comfortable speaking out, and they're not if people are, saying these hard things about them.
Yeah. It is happening. I know from friends that I have, you know, Facebook friends that I have in Japan, not only do you have vegan restaurants now, there are also great pictures of activism that goes on there, where people, you know, hold banners, explain it to their fellow Japanese people. So they are there. It's the same like in China. We have met so many great Chinese people that do the right thing in China, where it is much more difficult for them probably than it is for me here in England. So this is really a case where, and that's what I like about the idea of having 82 cities, because this is a real working together where it doesn't matter what you look like or where you come from.
Exactly, and you know, it doesn't, it's fantastic if it can be in front of an embassy, but you know what, in a park, at a library, as long as folks are standing up and saying, hey world, this is happening, and even if each city just reaches one new person, that's one new person that knows this is going on. And that's how you affect change.
I wanted to ask you this. Obviously, it's a question that I get asked a lot, but I thought I asked you as well, because a lot of people obviously are a bit worried if they sort of, you know, come on the bandwagon, how to deal with the emotions. And I don't really have an answer for this. I have good days and bad days. Sometimes I just cry my eyes out, you know, and then I have days where I can just keep on going. And more of the time, more often than not, I actually meet great people. So being part of this animal rights movement actually is a great thing for me, you know, and also think that sort of pushes me up and lifts me up at times. So, have you found your way of dealing with the negatives?
There's a lot of different things that we tell folks to do. A lot of things you just need to do to take care of yourself. And we tell people to find something beautiful to look at every day, so that you don't focus on all of the ugly out there. Meditation is very, very helpful. It helps keep you centered, and it's just a very, very good tool for the mind and body in general. Please, everybody should...
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I do shamanic healing, you know, as part of what I do. And Reiki and all that kind of stuff. And it's for me, it's one of the best tools that you could use, because, you know, you can actually be in the midst of a campaign and still find that center within.
You have to be able to, you know, focus on your breathing, because if you can control your breath, you can keep yourself centered no matter what. Yes. We tell folks to get outside, you know, take a walk, enjoy nature, and, you know, not even though we are following the hunts every single day from beginning to end, and we've literally, our team has done this since we were founded, you know, step away. Don't make yourself watch this all of the time. We have a bunch of people on our team, and we're here to support one another. That's another piece of it, is to find like-minded people to talk with. Laughing, you know, find something to laugh at every single day.
Sleeping. It's not really rocket science in that sense, you know, that when you are in there together, you bond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that in itself is very uplifting anyway, even if it's difficult.
And that's what I'm seeing, that's what I'm observing with these hosts around the world. You know, they're all planning these events, but they're all supporting one another too, because, you know, it can be lonely to be sitting here going, oh my gosh, I'm planning this event and I don't know what's, you know, I've never done this before. But these folks have friends now around the world who are kind of guiding them through the process. And that's kind of what we do during the hunts. As we post updates, there's a tremendous amount of mutual support that takes place on the wall of our Facebook page. We do urge people, though, and I think one of the ways that you can really feel good about it is to take action and to do sign and share the online petitions. We've had very successful...
And also, you know, since there are events going on, I think what we also do need is people on the streets. You know, and you don't even have to hold a banner. Just be there. Receive all the others. It's brilliant.
That's what Rick said to me in this interview that we just did. You know, the most important thing is to show up. You know, imagine what would happen if all these people showed up in Taiji. But it'd be, you know, wonderful if everybody listening could find an event in their community. And if there isn't one, just please contact me at our social media campaign, Save Misty the Dolphin, on Facebook. It's not too late to start one.
So that's basically www.facebook.com/SaveMistyTheDolphin.
Just type in Save Misty the Dolphin on Facebook. We've got an image of Misty right there on, you know, our profile, and there's a countdown showing how many days until the slaughter resumes. And then if you just message the administrators or post a message for us, We take our jobs very seriously there. We're all volunteers. We do have a Cove guardian, Chastity Reed, on our team. But, you know, Misty the Dolphin is a labor of love for a team of activists around the world, and we will not stop until this ends.
Yeah, and I just want to mention this. Obviously, we're online. We're making this available online before the event. But if you listen to this, if you happen to listen to this on the radio, because we're repeating this in autumn, and just because the killings may have stopped by then, you could still visit that page. This isn't over by a long shot.
We care about vulnerable marine mammals the worldwide. I mean, we have worked very hard on the slaughter of sea lions at the Bonneville Dam in Washington State. We cover issues related to the whales and captive orcas. There's no shortage of work for the people in the Misty community.
And you know what's interesting? Because you mentioned the whales there and the orcas. I talked to a gentleman a couple of weeks ago who is dedicating his time to help wolves. That's what he does. And he became interested in animal rights after listening or hearing about Morgan the orca.
Oh, yeah.
And you kind of think like, wow, that's completely unrelated. Yet he, you know, so something happens. So basically the point I'm making is that when you listen to this in autumn, just don't think, oh, that was in August or September. You listen to this, I guarantee you there are things that you can do.
There's plenty to do. I mean, the Cove movie came out in, you know, what was it, 2010. And there's still plenty to do.
Yeah, I'm just saying it, you know? I mean, obviously, I just want to make that sure because sometimes, you know, sometimes you listen to stuff and, and people think, oh, that was an event. Yes, it was an event, but you know, the whole shebang is still going on. Just to say that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Cindy, thank you so much for talking to me. Been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much for talking with me. And, you know, I understand that you're going to be talking and have talked with some of our hosts from the local events around the world. They're working so hard. Their events are going to be great.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we just appreciate all of the support that you're giving to it.
You're very welcome. And I also, you know, wanted to say that obviously when you listen to this, you probably have been able to talk to five people because of the, you know, we're limited time-wise. And they obviously represent the 82 states and countries. And, you know, just to say that, so, you know, nothing happens in isolation, really. That's another thing that I wanted to mention, just because we didn't get any, you know, from all countries, that doesn't mean they're not in there with the heart, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know what? It's all about one person standing up and making a difference. And, you know, nobody should feel isolated. And if anybody wants to become involved in the cause, we have plenty of ways for them to do it. And if you can't get out to an event, you can still pick up the phone and call your Japanese embassy and politely ask them to please stop issuing permits for the Taiji dolphin slaughter. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, there's always something that can be done, you know. And the other thing is, you know, we talked about meditation. I believe very strongly in energy and meditation, and I think intention is everything. So even if you sit at home and you kind of say, like, well, there's not much I can do, you know, if you just do one thing, imagine if you just do one thing and your intention is to do something good, it will travel. I absolutely believe that, you know?
I couldn't agree more. A friend of mine, Martha Brock, says she always visualizes a blue cove.
Yes, absolutely.
And there's a lot to be said for that.
Really true. Yeah, exactly. See things as healed. It's usually the message that is the most important. You know, because if you can envision it, then that's a way of moving forward.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I hope to come back and talk with you another time after all of this is said and done, and we can celebrate a blue cove forever.
Exactly, that would be awesome. I mean, that's one of my dreams, you know, sitting there, not having to worry about a thing, and you know, and the world has has solved one more problem, you know.
Yeah.
Wild Time, Thomas Yannick on 106.8 TCRFM.
You are listening to Wild Time, the Animal Rights / World Conservation Show with myself, Thomas Janak, here on tcrfm.co.uk and, of course, online on wildtimeonline.blogspot.com. Now, I just talked to Sandy McElhaney in the States, and you probably noticed that the sound quality wasn't great. And some people say, like, how does this work? You weren't distorted, but your guests were. Well, that's because we talked via a mobile phone. And sometimes when we record this, the sound quality isn't great. It's not her fault, not my fault, it's just technology. But anyway, we got through it. So, and I'm now talking to the next person, which is a really great thing. You know, I love technology when it works. I'm actually talking to Nicola Sherlock, and the funny thing is she's from Devon, I think, at least, you know, from England, and now she lives in Ireland. I used to live in Ireland for 10 years, now I'm living in England, so sort of things are a bit reversed here. Nicola, very welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you very much for having me. Nice to talk to you.
It's funny because you just mentioned that you moved to Dingle in the mid-90s.
Yes.
And I arrived in Dublin in 2000, and I lived there for about, I don't know, 10 years and 3 weeks.
Okay.
And then in 2003, which is also 10 years ago already, almost, I studied digital media in Tralee. This is how I got involved in radio.
Okay.
It's a really, really small world, isn't it?
It is a small world. It really is, actually. I moved to Dingle in 1995 because after many months of dreaming about dolphins almost nightly, I realised I needed to pursue my dreams, and I moved over and started to swim with fungi.
Mm-hmm. So for the people who don't know what that is, fungi is not it's not a fungi. Fungus, he's a basically what it is, he just arrived there some years ago, and he likes to swim with boats.
Yes,
so obviously he's now sort of a tourist attraction.
Oh, he has been
as it were. But the good thing about it is he's still being kept wild, semi-wild. You know, but he's not completely wild because he loves humans. So he has some issues there. You know, but and that's really funny because you know obviously when you listen to this you know that we're talking about the Save Japan Dolphin events, and Nicola is involved in organizing the one in Dublin, and before we, you know, started recording here, you told me, Nicola, that you the only thing that you sort of organized before was for nightclubs.
Well, I organized an event called Dance for the Dolphins in a club that I was doing the door on, and it was lovely because I had all my friends there, and we did a wonderful night, and we raised quite a few £100s, and so that was great. But I was in my comfort zone doing that, mm-hmm. and then I organized another one for the rainforest, and again, that went really well. So this is different for me because, you know, this is going out onto the streets in front of the Japanese embassy, and I don't know who's going to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just going on a prayer, really, and great faith that it will go well.
Yeah, but also, you know, since this is such a big event and people are aware, and, you know, there have been protests in Ireland against Tai Chi, so I wouldn't be surprised if there would be people there. And also, you know, even though I sort of do radio for almost a decade, you know, I'm a salesman by trade, and it doesn't really matter if I organize, let's just say, talking to people or organizing, sending parcels from A to B. I think once you are good in organizing, you will manage.
Yes, yes, and it will be fine. Even if there's three of us there, we've got hundreds of leaflets, I don't mind. I would love as many people as possible because obviously the more people, the more energy, the more power, the more people on the street that we can touch.
Absolutely, and also the more people in the embassies see that people are taking this seriously, you know?
Yes, absolutely, because we're doing it right outside the embassy. We're right opposite the embassy, there's a green, and we're doing it there. So I'm just going to go, and I just know that it will be fine, and it'll be wonderful, and it'll be a great day. And I just know that I can't do nothing to help these dolphins. I mean, they go through hell.
Absolutely.
It's horrible, and I can't not help them. After I've swum with many wild dolphins down in Dingle, and, you know, it's been such a beautiful experience that I need to do everything I can to help them.
Yeah, I mean, they are quite special. I mean, you know, this is an animal rights show, so we're also reporting on bugs and scorpions and whatever have you. So to us, all animals are valuable. But there's just something about them, isn't it?
They're very, very healing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever got to swim with one. You're in Tralee. You might have come down to Dingle or not. I
was in Dingle.
Yes.
And I took a picture of Fungi back in the day, because I wouldn't be one to swim with him simply because, you know, I don't want him to be held somewhere until I'm ready. So I always had a, you know, if he's there and if I happen to swim there and he swims by, that's fine, you know. But the whole concept of sort of keeping him there, you know, which is not what they did anyway, but I just thought I just didn't even go down that road, you know.
I swam with him for years, so I was able to see that if he didn't want to come into somebody, he wouldn't come in. You wouldn't see him. There was no way that you could hold him captive in any way at all.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying it, you know, because obviously, you know, when we talk about these things, people sort of say, hang on, what's going on there? So just to say that, you know, this is a wild area where people obviously take boats out to see him, and, you know, if you want to swim with him, that means you just jump into the water. And
you might be there or not. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, Fungi was completely wild. He was not fed by anybody. He had the choice to leave at any time. Now, sometimes I used to go out on small little sailing boats with him, like little toppers, and we would go around the corner, and there was always like almost like an invisible line, if you like, that he never seemed to cross. He would go out so far, and then he would always turn and go back into the bay. Mm. So he just stays. I think he's been there since 1984.
Yeah, I think I personally, when I have my weird ideas about it, I think he is a very conscious ambassador.
I think he's a huge ambassador. Yeah. I mean, the amount of people that have learned about dolphins because of him being in that place. I mean, there's only about another two dolphins or three dolphins around the world that live in one place that you can actually go to swim with. Mm. And this is another thing about the event, is the dolphins that aren't killed in the cove are then sold for that, spend the rest of their lives in aquariums, in tanks.
Yeah, have to do silly tricks.
Silly tricks for humans, yes.
Yeah.
And so it's really, really lovely when you can actually go out on a boat to a dolphin in the wild, or dolphins, and actually see them how they truly are in their real habitat.
I think, you know, we talked about this on quite a number of different shows, actually, how you know, ecotourism and just go into the wild and watch animals there is the way to go. Because, you know, I just want to plug myself here if I can. We just did an interview with David Kirby, who is an author and a journalist, and he did write a book about SeaWorld. It's called Death at SeaWorld, where he basically went in there, you know, not as an animal rights activist, but as a, you know, as an author, to really have a look what's going on there. And, you know, he and all the experts he talked to came to the conclusion, which obviously is not rocket science for any of us here, that animals in captivity, you know, orcas, whales, dolphins, it's not a good thing to do.
No, it's not. Can you imagine if you were just swimming freely one day with your family, and then the boats appear and they net you, and you're scared and you're fearful and you don't know what's going on, and then you're herded into this area where, well, you witness lots of your family members being literally hacked to death. I mean, it's completely hell for those dolphins. It's horrible. It's
and
real.
And what is also very disturbing about it is then, and you probably have seen, we talked about the cove in the previous interview.
Yeah.
You know, what they do is they really injure the kids really badly. I mean, when I talk to kids, I mean, you know, the smaller dolphins. And the parents stay with them until the next morning. When the boats come, kill them all.
You know? They'll injure one dolphin because they know that the rest of the pod will not leave that dolphin. Yeah. They stick together. Yeah. So they know if they injure one, they'll all stay. Yeah. I mean, what I would love to do would be able to get in the water in Taiji and set them all free. That's what I really love to
actually,
do.
I was actually just saying this to my previous guest, that that's what we all wanted to do. And what would happen is they would just get us out of the water and deport us.
Yes.
You know, because there's a huge industry behind it. You know?
There is a huge industry behind it. But I would just love it if we could all turn up on, like, our boats or something.
Yeah, I envision it like a James Bond thing.
Yeah,
you go in there, you know, and just, you know, and somehow, you know, remove them all from there, you know.
If we come in helicopters and we dive down and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes I just think if we had thousands of people, if we could organise thousands of people to arrive at Taiji and get in the water, that would stop it, you know.
And also, I think what is also important, you know, the more people come on board about this globally, eventually the Japanese will adhere to the laws. And so that's another thing that we really have to change, is the political will, because this is a political game at the end of the day.
It is. And people love dolphins. Do you know, people really do love dolphins. If they knew what was really happening down there, they wouldn't like that.
Well, you know, I'm not too convinced about this, because I remember years ago people would say, like, you know, once people know, it's going to end, and it hasn't stopped. And, you know, a lot of people know about undervivisection, and it's still going to happen. As long as there's some money to be made, this It's not going to end. So so that's why I think we all have to have some work to do. I mean, I agree to a point. You know, the more people know about it, the less dolphins probably die. But it really needs to stop.
Oh, it really does. And not just the dolphins, just all the animals really in the world, isn't it? They're being killed for money and stuff. Yeah. But this is what we're focusing on now is the dolphins in Japan. And if I can help, if I can do anything, if I can shift some awareness, make some people aware of it, then I've done something that I'll be proud of.
Absolutely. And I'm sure, you know, that you will attract some people. So how is it going so far?
Well, it's going fine, actually. Basically, I'm just kind of reaching out to people via Facebook and Twitter. And then the next couple of weeks, I'm going to up my campaigning, really, every day. I'm approaching some of the animal rights networks and things like that so they can email their members and things. So I think it's about the best thing that I can do right now, really, is just is raise awareness that way.
I mean, I you know, worked very closely with Aaron and Nara in Ireland, you know, and they, you know, they have become great friends. And the funny thing is, you know, I've moved to Birmingham 2 years ago, and just in April we had the anti-vivisection day here in Birmingham, and I saw both Laura from Nara and John Carmody from Aaron. And that was like, you know, this huge happening in the midst of all this sort of seriousness was great to meet some friends, you know. And the first thing is like, how
yeah.
This is quite funny, you know. When I arrived in, I always tell that story on air, people get sick and tired of it. But when I arrived in Ireland in 2000, I had my school English, you know. And the guy says to me, where are you going to?
Irish when you say that. I can't even do that. Where are you going to?
You know, I lived in Ireland for 10 years, and you know, I worked as a social worker as well, and they taught me the lingo.
Okay.
Because they were saying, like, you know, with your bloody German accent, we don't want you here. so they taught me all that. So that's all good. And also, you know, it's interesting, you know, sort of being British in Ireland. A lot of people think this is a big topic, but you probably think, probably at some stage it was, but you obviously lived there for a long time, so the anti-British thing doesn't seem to be as difficult any longer.
Not any longer. I never had any difficulties with the Irish people. They've always been so wonderful and warm and hospitable and the crap, you know. They've always been great. Always.
It's just, you know, it's interesting, and it's also important, I think, to mention this, because obviously you do have people that still think, you know, this isn't going to work. And it is. So before I let you go, because that you know, I have no doubt believing that you will do well with this thing. But it's interesting when I read about you that you do quite a lot of things. So so we're not going to talk about, because I should have briefed you on this if I wanted to talk to you about it. You know, sort of what you do work wise. So probably at some stage you talk about what you do, because you work with people on food issues. And so that's probably something that at some stage or some later stage you should probably do a proper interview about this.
Yeah, that would be lovely.
Yeah, that would be really lovely because, you know, this is a World Conservation Show. So that also means looking after yourself is important. But I wanted to talk to you about the rainforest thing that you organized.
Okay.
Because we talked about the rainforest a number of times. We did a show about the Belo Monte Dam. We talked about the orangutans that are directly, obviously, affected by things that are happening down there. You know, I had an Amazon parrot before he unfortunately passed away just recently. So the rainforest is a topic that you know, that we have touched on. What was it about that you organized there?
This was back in 1994 or 1995, I think. So I'm literally just going on memory now. I did it just before I moved to Ireland, actually. I called it Let It Rain, REIGN. And I just raised money to send off to one of the conservation charities. I can't even remember which one it was now. But yes, it was lovely. And I really feel that campaigning and being active in life is something that's really important to me.
And also it shows you, you know, when you just said that you did that and you raised money, that you did raise money. So one person can do this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And you throw in a few special things like raffles and stuff. Yeah. And I'd go around to the shops and get some of the shops, even like Body Shop and some of the bigger shops, to donate prizes and things like that. So that gets you a little bit more money generated too. But I do love things like this. I've actually started up a group called Speaking Up for the Voiceless. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping at some point that will become an organisation that I can run, which I can fund from my work with my coaching and eating disorders and food and nutrition and stuff.
Is there a website, or is this on Facebook already?
I'm no websites yet. My websites will be up hopefully later this year, but it's Facebook is great. That's where my group is. Yeah. Speaking for the Voiceless.
Okay, so just to get that right, because obviously, you know, we're airing this here, so why not mention it? So it's www.facebook.com/ and then?
Speaking Up for the Voiceless.
Okay, Speaking Up for the Voiceless. So that's just, you know, if you listen to this, have a look there, you know.
Yeah, lovely. Please do. Please come. I've got a page and I've also got a group, and it's a lovely group. We really focus on being positive and focusing on the change that we want to see in the world.
Absolutely, because that's the idea, isn't it? Don't wait for someone to change it for you.
Yes, but focus on what you want to achieve, not on what you don't want to happen anymore. That's important.
So were you always? Would you say that you were always aware? How did you become aware that not only did you have a voice, but that you ought to be doing something? Was there an event that sort of cemented this for you?
Yeah, I think I was always very, very shy as a child. So actually I didn't really have a voice when I was young. So actually, I'm still quite shy now, but if I'm speaking up again about something that I'm really passionate about, like animal welfare, for instance, I really find that I have a voice. Mm-hmm. And doing what I believe is right and doing what I believe the world needs. And I became vegetarian when I was 23 after I was looking at some animal cruelty leaflets, and I thought, I can't eat meat and say that I'm 100% against this. So I became a vegetarian straight away. But recently enough, a couple of months ago now, I watched Earthlings. Mm-hmm. And I nearly turned it off a few times. I don't know if you've seen the film.
Yeah, I have it. And it is a movie that I have to watch in installments, as it were. I cannot sit through it properly, even though I've been doing this work for a while. My work turned me vegan, you know?
Yes. So I'm vegan now because of that film. Before the film finished, that was it. I knew I was going to be vegan for life. And that's where Speaking Up for the Voiceless actually was birthed, while I was watching that film. Well, I'm going to be a voice for the Voiceless.
And that's what I mean. You know, it's so great that films do this. I was just, when I talked to one of my previous guests earlier, which you obviously, you know, if you listen to this, you already listen to this. Sandy just said to me, you know, the person that I talked to prior to this interview, she said that she watched The Cove, and now she's involved in Save the Misty campaigns. And you know, so it's and you know, I talked about John from Aaron. He years ago in Ireland, when he was younger, he's still young. he saw on the front page what happened to the dolphins, and he was immediately thought he has to do something. And then you know, Animal Rights Action Network in Ireland is now big over there.
I think. And this is how it's spread. So I saw The Cove as well quite a few years ago. Mm. And it sickens me. I mean, you can't watch films like that without being changed by them. One of the guys who's going to be coming up to my protest actually became vegan after watching The Cove as well. Yep. So, this is how we may not be able to make much change at the moment, but if we raise awareness, then we can make great change later. That's my thing. We just need to wake people up to what the truth is. And for a dolphin that's not hatched to death to then be separated and maybe even flown thousands of miles in a plane to live the rest of its life in a concrete pool is just wrong. So please, people, do not go to dolphin shows. Do not buy the tickets, because captivity kills. Yeah. Can you imagine spending the rest of your life in a tiny tank doing? I mean, it's horrific.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is the message I wanna spread. Dolphins deserve their freedom, and they need it just as much as we do.
TCR FM, making as much noise as we can on 106.8 FM and online at tcrfm.co.uk. TCR FM.